Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 47, as we edge closer to number 50. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and with me, again, as usual, is my co-host, Stephen Gies. Good evening, Stephen. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right, but I'm kind of scared. I'm cowering here waiting for the heat dome to come get me. You expecting it up there, too, or is it just down here and to the west?
Well, we're going to have some hotter weather next week, but, you know, like I was talking off air, it's been a little cooler. It's 75, mid-70s, 75, 77 the last couple of days, which has been nice because we had a run of 90-degree plus weather, and it was 100-degree humidity, and it was just miserable. So I'm enjoying the break.
Yeah. Well, I had kind of a fun week. I got to go see Mark Herndon and his wife, country singer Leah Seawright, perform not too far from here, which was definitely a nice kind of a sort of post-pandemic treat. It's been a while since I've gotten to see them. I mean, it was especially fun because my friend who went with me, she's been a longtime Alabama fan for decades, and I mean all the way back. Every year she went to the Appreciation Days, which is a free concert Alabama used to do up there in Fort Payne, where they're from, every June. And her favorite player was always Mark Herndon, the drummer. And many, many, many times she went to shows and tried to hang out and see if she could get his autograph or meet him or whatever. Never had any luck. So I told her, well, we're going to, you know, some local place and see a band play, and didn't tell her who it was. And then Mark Herndon came out and she about fell out of her chair. So that was kind of fun to see that. And then during the break, as soon as they went to a break, Mark and Leah came straight to our table, gave me a hug and greeted me and all that. And she hadn't realized that we had published Mark Herndon's memoir, which is called The High Road, Memories of a Long Trip, and details not just his life growing up, but a lot of it is about his years as the drummer for Alabama, touring the world, playing sold out arenas, number one hits, and, you know, all the fame and fortune and adulation that comes with that. So I pulled out a copy of the book and a Sharpie, and he autographed it for her and took pictures with her and gave her a hug and all that. So I scored some points that night, I'm telling you. It was a lot of fun. There's a couple of pictures in today's newsletter if you want to go check those out. The video we made for Mark's book is also in today's newsletter. And if you go over and check Mark Herndon on YouTube, you'll see all kinds of videos, his induction into the Country Music Hall of Fame and some others as well.
Yeah, I even put a little blurb about it, the concert that you went to, on my blog, The Indie Spot. So you can go over there and check out. There's a couple of pictures up on there as well. Now, I see we got a couple of comments here real quick on Twitter. Robert Willscroft says, is this episode number 46 or 47? This is episode number 46. Now, officially, technically, it's 47, but there's an early episode that's not in the archives. There were some issues with it, and it's gone. It was one of the early ones. So, but this is episode 46. Did I say 47?
I believe
I did, because here on this on my notes it says 47, the rundown. But on my calendar and on the show page here, it's 46. So it's episode 46. Then Dr. Helen Burrell said, even a swift perusal of Jan Sykes' presence on the internet shouts out prolific. What an impressive collection of her creative works. Happy to listen to her here. Well, welcome to the show, Dr. Helen. We are glad you are able to listen this week. And yes, our guest will be coming here pretty soon. This is going to be a fun show. So
yeah, definitely.
I'm looking forward
now,
to this.
In the newsletter that you got this morning, for those of you who are savvy enough to sign up for our newsletter list, You saw the video from My Three Wishes. My Three Wishes is out there in pre-sale now in all of the editions. There's more than 200 different editions around the world of ebooks. Plus, we've got the hardcover out, but we have not approved the softcover for distribution yet because the proofs are looking a little bit dark to us. And we don't know what the printers did, but we're trying to get to the bottom of that. So sometime in the next few days, we should have the softcover out there as well. But she's set her book for a July 7th release. So if unless you're looking for that softcover, get over there now to your favorite retailer and go ahead and pre-order that book and check out the video. We also in today's newsletter alerted you that that 20 books pack, the science fiction collection that Robert G. Williscroft has a book in, is now for sale. For less than $8, you can get 20 science fiction books by some of the great science fiction masters. I mean, that's a terrific deal. And, yes, of course, you get the Star Child Compact, the first in the Star Child trilogy by Fresh Ink Group member Robert G. Willis-Croft. And that sale runs through, I believe, the 4th of July. You've got about two and a half weeks to get out there and get your package. So go check out those books as well.
And speaking of Robert G. Willis-Croft, I am putting the finishing touches on the Mac McDowell Missions video, the updated one with the Operation Arctic Sting book in this one. And I hope to have, if the video is done, I just have to put the transitions in from frame to frame. And I'm going to have that done tomorrow. So it'll be up on the YouTube channel either tomorrow or Friday. So keep an eye out for that. Get over there and check it out and smash the like button.
Yeah, smash it and then smash it again. The tweet a minute ago from Dr. Helen Burrell reminds me that we are getting ready to build a new website for Dr. Helen as well. She is just getting a tremendous amount of national and international interaction surrounding her book called American Agony, The War on Opioid Patients in Pain. And it's about the what she can terms as an overreaction by law enforcement and other officials around the United States in particular, cracking down on prescriptions for opioids and kind of going too far and causing a lot of people who depend on their pain meds to lose their prescriptions or lose access to their drugs. So she's putting together a new website. We're going to be working with her on that in order to be like a clearinghouse for people who want more information and who also want to participate in some activism, including having mechanisms in there for sending copies of her book. Boy, what a good idea, huh? To politicians and other people who are involved in policy and who might be able to affect how things are done. So we're excited about building a new website for the first time in a while.
Yeah, and speaking of new websites, Fresh Ink Group author Barbara B.A. Johnson, she has a new website. It is the URL is B.A. Johnson Sassy One, that's the number one, .godaddysites.com. B.A. Johnson Sassy One, .godaddysites.com. You can go over there and read all about the author, read about her book, and her video for Sassy Discovers the AME Church is on that site as well. And that you can find that on the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel as well. So
yeah,
again,
she has some
go
nice,
over there and hit the like.
She has some nice photos from her events too. Like she did a book launch with a signing and had a lot of people come and it was just a real nice thing. Now, a lot of this kind of stuff, we're putting these in the weekly newsletter. So that newsletter is expanding a little bit each week. If you're not on the list, boy, you sure need to be, because isn't it embarrassing when you're standing around the water cooler and that's all anybody's talking about and you didn't see it this week? I mean, what are you going to talk about? You're just standing there like, you know.
Newsletter,
but anyway,
newsletter. I missed
yeah.
it.
But there's several ways that you can do it in that newsletter. If someone forwarded it to you, there's several links that you can subscribe. Or just go to freshinkgroup.com. Right there on the homepage, down near the bottom, is a little form that you can fill out to subscribe to it. And of course, if it's too much good information, too many cool videos, too many great authors, and too many cool books, you can always unsubscribe. But who would want to do that?
Yeah. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody in their right mind.
So what if we miss the show?
If you miss the show, I was just getting to that. Listeners, if you miss the show, there are currently five places where you can find it in the archives, and pretty soon there will be six, but the five that are current, you can go to beamweeks.com, freshinkgroup.com, StephenGees.com. And at all three of those websites, just look for the podcast tab and every one of our episodes are there. You can also find us on YouTube. Go over to YouTube, type in Fresh Ink Group. You'll find our channel and every one of our episodes, plus a bunch of really cool book trailers are up there. A lot of cool content. So go over there and check that out. And we're also on Spotify. So if you have a Spotify account, it can be the freebie or it can be the premium one. Just go over there and type in Voice of Indie, all one word, and you'll have every one of our episodes at your fingertips. So go over there and check them out. Help support the show. If you missed past episode, this is a good place to find who was on and what we talked about.
Now we're going to try something new this week. I'm sitting here looking at a shelf full of Fresh Ink Group books, and a lot of these books I have two and three copies of. And I thought, man, what good is two or three copies of a book sitting there on that shelf when we could be giving those away to people who participate in our program? So tonight we're going to start giving away books. And this time I've got a box of one of my books sitting here, hardcover, dust jacketed hardcovers of Comes This Time to Float, which is a collection of short stories. So what we're going to do, we might try this different ways in the coming weeks, but what we're going to do this time is anybody who calls in today, we're saving your phone number. Anybody who posts a comment on Twitter, we're going to save those as well. And anytime in the next 6 or 7 days, if you go to YouTube and go to the Fresh Ink Group channel and find the Comes This Time to Float video and leave a comment on the video, we will consider those three sources, people on Twitter, people who call in, and people who leave a comment on the video, and then we will randomly have a drawing and give a book to one of those people. Who knows? We get a bunch of people, we might give away a couple of books. But we're going to start trying some different mechanisms to give away some books and see if we can get people interested in reading again.
Yeah. So as Stephen just mentioned, call or tweet, here's how you can do that. If you want to call in and if you have a question or a comment, it's 516-453-9902. That's 516-453-9902. And on Twitter, all you have to do is put in hashtag Fresh Ink Group within the text of your tweet, and we will see it. Don't use the handle for the Fresh Ink Group Twitter handle because we're not going to see it during the show. But if you use hashtag Fresh Ink Group, we'll see it. And
now, why don't you let the professionals tell us that again?
Just in case you forget. Nope. Wrong one. Here we go. No, it keeps moving on me.
Yeah, it's a great website.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Yeah, when you get a lot of audio files loaded up on here, you have to scroll. And sometimes when you're at the bottom and you push the button, it'll push up and move you to the next one.
Get to this week's guest. That's why people are here. Everybody heard Jan Sykes is going to be on, and that's there's just tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people out there clamoring to get for their chance to meet Jan. So let's start with her bio. Multi-award-winning author Jan Sykes weaves stories in a creative and entertaining way. She has been called a magician and wordsmith extraordinaire by her readers and peers. Her genres are biographical fiction, poetry, short stories, and paranormal romance. Jan has been an avid reader all her life. She still recalls the excitement that surged through her the first time she realized she could decipher words. Many summers, she won the highest award possible from the Hobbs, New Mexico Public Library for reading the most books. There's nothing she loves more than losing herself in a story. Oddly enough, she never had any ambition to be a writer, but she wound up in midlife with a story that begged to be told. Not just any story, but a true story that rivaled any fiction creation. Through fictitious characters, the tale came to life over the span of 4 books. Not satisfied to stop with the books, she released CDs of original music to match the time period of each story segment. Jan went on to publish a book of poetry and art, and she was far from done. With quite a few more stories to boast, she does not intend to turn off the creative fountain. She is a member of the Authors Marketing Guild, the Writers League of Texas, Romance Writers of America, and the Paranormal Writers Guild. She is an avid fan of Texas music and the grandmother of five beautiful souls. She resides in North Texas. Hey, Jan.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, Stephen. Wow, that sounded like a really fun person.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Truly, it is an honor.
Well, we're glad to have you. Now, in your bio, you mentioned the Hobbs New Mexico Public Library. So we assume that's where you grew up, in New Mexico?
I did. I always say that I got as close to Texas as I could get because Hobbs is literally 5 miles from the Texas state line. But that's where I was born and raised. And lived all of my growing up years. And when I turned 18, I left home. And since I was the baby of the family, mom and dad left home too. They sold the house and went off up into northern New Mexico. And so it was kind of like that was over. I had no reason to ever go back.
So where else have you lived?
Oh, my goodness.
Everywhere.
This is gonna, suddenly that Hank Snow song came to mind. I've been everywhere.
I've been everywhere.
So you know the song.
Yeah. I know the song.
So I, when I left Hobbs, I moved to Abilene, Texas. I had two sisters who were living there, and my oldest sister, who just turned 85 this year, got me a job at the Abilene Boiler Company as a receptionist. So moved to Abilene, lived there for several years, and then wound up moving to Austin. Lived in Austin for several years, and then moved to Houston. Houston, Texas was the one place I have lived that I could not wait to get out of. It's not a great place to live. But I did. I lived in Houston for a while. And then from there, I moved to Shreveport, Louisiana. And then kind of took a little one-year soiree through Florida and lived in Tampa for a while. And then came back to Shreveport. And then from Shreveport, I moved to Coleman, Texas. And that's where I lived for the most I've lived in one place. I was there for over 25 years. From there, I moved up here to North Texas. So I've been everywhere.
Yeah, so what do you have against Wyoming?
I don't. And I lived in Colorado for a year, too.
Oh, okay.
I forgot about that one.
Now, in your bio, when Stephen was reading your bio, he had mentioned that you're a reader. Does this go back to childhood that you've loved to read?
It does. And, you know, it's funny because I can distinctly remember the excitement that I had when I could first decipher words. It was the Dick and Jane readers. I just got so excited when I can open it and read it. And it never stopped. I have always loved reading. And as the bio said, my sister and I, we every summer, the library gave us some kind of an award because we'd check out the most books of anybody in the town. But part of it was because I grew up without a television. It was against our religion to have TV. So reading was entertainment. It was everything. And I learned that you could literally travel the world through the pages of books. And
yes.
I still do.
Yeah, you know, I grew up with a TV in my house, and I still read a lot. You're talking about when you first discovered you could decipher words. For me, the first book was Where the Wild Things Are, and it was the teacher in kindergarten reading it to the class. And then by first grade, I remember that's when we got to go to the library for the first time as students. And I was already reading at that point in time. And I remember that was the first book I ever checked out was Where the Wild Things Are. And that was my first favorite book.
My grandkids love that book. They've all had it, every one of them. So I've read it multiple times. And
I even mentioned it.
You know, in that excitement. That excitement of going to the library.
Yeah, I mentioned it in a short story I wrote that's in Slivers of Life, and it that specifically references that book, and it was one of the characters who had passed away. It was his favorite book, but there's a reason why I put that in there, because that's just was all right. What was my first favorite book as a kid, and that one just always stood out to me.
Yeah.
And I started with the Iliad and the Odyssey in first grade. You people are kind of weird.
Oh my God. Okay.
So we're gonna interrupt briefly and run our first commercial here, and this commercial is for Mark Herndon's book. Now, before we run it, Jan, you had a chance to meet Mark and Leah and interview them before. Your impressions?
I did, and they're lovely people, and I just thoroughly enjoyed interviewing them, and then helping Mark promote his book. It was a great joy, and just super nice people.
Yeah, they're all a lot
right.
of fun.
All right, here we go.
What drives a man to spend 26 years performing night after night? To persevere through a stifling tour bus, bad food, strange women, flared tempers, a plane nearly blown from the sky? Just how did that troubled military brat with a dream claw his way from dirt floor dive bar shows to the world's biggest stages? Aviator, author, and Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon lived that dream playing with Alabama, one of the most popular and celebrated bands of all time. He learned some hard lessons about people and life, the music industry, the accolades and awards, how easy it is to lose it all, and how hard it is to survive, to embrace sobriety, to live even one more day. Herndon's poignant memoir offers a tale at once cautionary and inspirational, delightful and heartbreaking, funny yet deeply personal. From innocence to rebellion to acceptance, can a man still flourish when the spotlight dims? Are true forgiveness, redemption, and serenity even possible when the powerful say everything you achieved somehow doesn't even count? That you're not who you and everyone who matters thought you were? Find all this and more in Mark's remarkable memoir, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in paperback and ebooks, and now in the keepsake dust-jacketed hardcover edition demanded by true fans. Mark Herndon refuses to slow down. So look back, look ahead, and join him on the trip. He's taking the high road.
Yeah, Mark, he's got an incredible story. If you haven't checked out this book, check it out. I got to read it early on, and man, I mean, just an incredible story. Like the commercial there said, he spent 28 years in this band, and by the end of it, he was basically told that, well, you weren't really part of it. But yeah, he was. He was there for a full 28 years, almost three decades, and he was there for the highs and the lows, and as Stephen talked about earlier, he was there for the induction into the Country Music Hall of Fame, meeting, was it President, was it the first Bush or was it Reagan?
I don't remember.
Yeah, well, he met one of the presidents when the band was invited. I think it was Reagan. He was invited.
Yeah,
they were
invited
to the White House. And, well, if he wasn't in the band, why would you invite him to the White House with you? So check it out.
We've got a comment over on Twitter from Verwayne Greenhoe, and I like this comment. He says, I love my newsletter. Verwayne, you're in for the drawing.
All right, Verwayne. Yeah.
So, Jan,
hold on here. Robert Wolfcroft has he's got a comment on here, too. We try to keep these up so they're timely. He says, not only can you travel the world through books, but you can also travel beyond Earth into the universe. And this is what
spoken like a science fiction author.
Yeah, this is the stuff that Robert writes about.
Yeah, definitely. So, Jan, what I started to ask there was all that moving around. I assume at some place you stopped long enough to go to school.
yeah, I did. I went all of my elementary and back when I went to school, it wasn't called middle school. It was called junior high.
Same here. I went to junior high. Never went to a middle school.
Right. Yeah, now it's middle school. But now I went to all of my schooling was in Hobbs, New Mexico. And I never went to a formal college. But when I started the process of writing these stories, I took several screenwriting and creative writing courses through a community college here in Collin County and then also in Colorado.
All right. You had talked about your family history, the older sister. You said she's 85?
My oldest sister is 85. It's kind of like mom and dad had two families in that they had my oldest sister, my next oldest sister, and my brother. And then there was this big gap, and then there's my sister next to me and me. So there was five of us all together.
Okay, because I was going to say.
But I have no memory.
Because, yeah, I mean, that's a huge gap because we talked off the air, and you're not anywhere near 85.
No, not there yet. But
she's a young, spry woman.
I have no memory
here.
Of growing up with these older siblings. They were gone, and my first real memory of my brother is him coming home on leave from the Army. And it was just kind of me and my sister, and we were each other's best friends, still are. She is a New York Times and USA Today award-winning author. So
cool.
She's been a super mentor to me.
You want to plug one of her books?
Oh, my goodness. Well, she just put out the first book in a new series this year.
Ooh.
She writes historical romance, all in the 1800s, all set in Texas. And I'm going to have to struggle to remember the name of it, but I think it's called The Cowboy of Legend. And her name is Linda Brody, Brody. And she has been, so when I started the process of writing these stories, I really thought she would write them, but she put them right back in my lap. But she's held my hand the whole way.
All right.
Oh, nice. Now, you've been married, which people who read your biographical fiction would know about. You want to tell us about what happened there?
Yeah, and I don't know how much I can tell without really getting into the books and talking about the books, and I know we're not quite ready to do that. But
not yet.
my husband passed away in 2009 that the stories are about. I met him in 1971. We got married in 1985, and there's a long stretch in between there, and we'll get to that too. But during that time, from where he was, he was telling me, I was 19 years old. He was telling me, you need to get on with your life. I'm going to die where I am, and you deserve to have a life. You deserve a family. You deserve children, blah, 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 blah. So I tried. I did get married. My first husband had a Harley Davidson motorcycle, and I am very shallow, but I have said many times I would never have given him a second look if he hadn't had the Harley because that was fun and I loved riding on the back of that Harley. Anyway, we did get married and I had my two daughters, and I was actually 4 months pregnant with my youngest one when we separated and divorced. So I've been married twice.
All right. The Harley. That's funny.
And you got five beautiful souls out of it, right?
Well, I've got five grandchildren.
Yeah. You want to brag on those for a second?
Oh, my goodness. So I had two daughters. and they're both incredibly smart, beautiful, strong women, so much smarter than I ever was. But my oldest daughter has three boys. The oldest one is 15, and the youngest one is 7. And then my youngest daughter has two girls, and they are 10 and 6. So it's funny that each one of them had just girls and boys.
Yeah.
But when we all get together, it's total chaos, and the cousins all love each other and love playing with it, well, except for the 15-year-old, and he's just like, oh, my God, can we just go somewhere where it's quiet? He's very much into computers and playing the video games, and he calls them, he tells everybody, I'm a gamer. And but all five of my grandchildren love to read. They love stories. And my 10-year-old granddaughter writes stories.
Ooh,
so that's been
cool.
So much fun. Yeah. She's got quite the imagination. But she is an avid reader. She devours books.
Good for her.
So maybe she'll publish one day.
Block, I guess. Yeah, right.
You're talking about with your second husband, the one that you've written these books about, that's
right.
The love of your life. Now, during that stretch of time where, you know, when you first met and then you went your own way and then you met up again and got married, was this somebody that was still very much in your heart, even though you were married to somebody else?
Oh, heavens, yes. Oh, yeah. And
okay.
We stayed in touch all those years through letters. And when the letter would come in the mail, I would hide it until I could read it by myself and be alone because, yes, he had my heart. And, you know, the logical mind said, go on your merry way and just chalk that one up to experience. But the heart wants what the heart wants.
Yeah, you know, when you find that love and it's, you know, that soulmate, so to speak, at the risk of sounding corny, but you just know it. And that's a hard thing to, even if you're moving on in your life, that's a hard thing to shake.
Yeah, it is. And the circumstances surrounding it certainly didn't make it any easier.
So, Beam, you want to run another commercial? We're halfway through showtime.
All righty.
This would be My Three Wishes, which we talked about earlier. It's available for pre-sale now in all of the editions except paperback. We're hoping to get that resolved in the next couple of days.
Hi, I'm Kanoi Kay, born and raised in Hawaii. At 19, I made three wishes: to travel to Japan with my Polynesian Review troupe, to entertain on ships cruising the seas, and to travel while working for the airline. My Three Wishes is a heartfelt memoir pursuing my dreams and bringing joy to appreciative audiences around the world. I achieved my wishes and more, creating a life that I cherish and others admire. See the pictures and hear my stories in this remarkable chronicle of sharing love and success with my children, a wonderful affirmation of Hawaiian ohana, the idea that true happiness dwells within the family. My Three Wishes is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats worldwide. Aloha.
That's another interesting story there, too. It's a memoir, and just really cool.
That's full of very cool pictures, and then she's got a fan page over on Facebook, too, where she's loaded up, I believe she said so far, almost 800 more photos. So if you like that book and like the pictures, you can definitely go see more.
So Jan, hobbies and interests. How do you spend your free time if you have free time? What do you like to do?
Well, I'm a huge follower of Texas music and I love live music. I was always drawn to live music even as far back as I can remember. And so I'm a big supporter of especially indie music artists and the Texas music artists. And in fact, I just got back from a music festival last weekend, which it's kind of a combination of the singer-songwriters during the daytime with just them and their guitars, and I love that, of being able to hear the lyrics and the words. And then as the day kind of progresses, then the bands come on. But it was just, it was incredible. And especially after being locked down the way we were. And so I still am very active in supporting and following Texas music. And I do work some of the music festivals. The first one of the year for me is in Abilene. It's the Outlaws and Legends Music Festival. And I always work that one. And when I say work, I have a gate, and my gate is where all of the VIPs and the music artists come through. So I love working that gate because I get to see everybody when they come in. And this year, this was kind of a really cool thing, and I won't get too sidetracked, but our headliner this year on Friday was Kevin Costner, and he has a band.
Yes, he does.
It was really very cool. And of course, there was no way to have any contact with him because they are still filming Yellowstone, and he was very sequestered. But I was able to get my first book, Flowers and Stone, to him. And he told the person who handed it to him that his wife and him would read it. So I'm waiting any day for that phone call from Kevin Costner that he wants to make a movie. But now
that would be fantastic.
It would, but, you know, in my dreams. But I do love the live music, and I love supporting the music artist. And I worked for several years for a music magazine, so I got to interview a lot of the artists, and I love doing that. And then I had a spot on my blog for a while where I was featuring music artists, and kind of the problem with that, and I don't know if you guys might have some insight into this, but with Mark Herndon being an exception, most music artists don't go onto the blog and comment to the people who are leaving comments for them. And I have, as much as I stress it, I have a hard time getting them to do that. He came on and commented to everybody, and people love that. And I guarantee you, he sold books.
Oh yeah. You know, I think the thing with that is, first of all, Mark's a people person. You hear the stories from Alabama fans over the years. He was the guy that always stayed after the show until the last autograph was signed. The other guys, they might hang out for a little bit, but he was always there, and he mingled with the fans. So Mark's a people person. So some of these other people might not necessarily be people.
Yeah, people.
But
I understand what you're saying.
Another thing is, they may have busy schedules to where they can't necessarily get back to those. I've been part of blog tours, and, you know, I've got a busy schedule, but I always, you know, at the end of the day, if somebody posted, my blog piece on their blog, at the end of that day, I'd block out an hour to where I can go through there and answer. So that's not really necessarily an excuse for somebody just because they've got a busy schedule.
No,
everybody.
It's not. And I do think part of it, too, is that a whole lot of them are just not real dependent on computers or even computer savvy. So I think maybe for some of them, they just didn't quite get the concept or how to do it. But but I love doing that. I love supporting the artist.
And I think also a lot of, you know, the bigger names, but not even just the bigger names, some of the, you know, the mid-level people, they don't really run their own social media. It's their name on the Twitter account, but it's somebody else that's actually running it for them.
That is so true.
But you mentioned, first of all, you said you love Texas music. Texas has such a variety. It's like Michigan. We got a variety here. Texas, I mean, you got Buddy Holly. You got Selena. You've got Waylon and Willie that made their marks there.
Yeah.
You've got ZZ Top.
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Just a rich stew of music. That's what's cool about Austin is all the different elements that are there.
I love it.
Now, I've got one for you. I've got one for you, Jan. You mentioned
about
mentioned Kevin Costner having a band, and that made me flash on other movie stars who have bands, like Kevin Bacon. There's a movie star who's got a band who's doing dates all around Texas at the end of this summer, and tickets are for sale for those shows right now. I've seen his concerts a couple of times, and I highly endorse him, and that's Billy Bob Thornton. He's got a band called
I've
the Boxmasters. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Man,
he
they put on a good show.
He actually performed at a place just right down the road from me here called Love and War in Texas, and I've seen him there. He puts on a good show, I agree.
Yes, he does. And the last tour, he had Robert Fripp on guitar as a guest guitar player.
Uh-huh.
Robert Fripp, who goes all the way back to King Crimson, and he was David Bowie's guitarist for more than a decade. It was just a fun treat to see that. So people out there, keep that in mind. If you see tickets on sale for Billy Bob Thornton, it's not a monologue. He's got his band, the Boxmasters, and they put on a great show.
They really do. I agree.
Of course, he's from Arkansas, so it's not quite Texas music, but, you know, fairly close.
Here. I mean, yeah, they play all over.
Yes, they do.
Now, Jan, you talked about you write in whatnot about country music. Have you interviewed any big names?
One of the most fun interviews I ever did was Kinky Friedman.
Kinky.
Wow.
He was a trip.
Did he wear one of his suits?
I don't know. It was over the phone, so I didn't see him. But
because he's known for some of the wild suits.
He's just funny. He has no filters, and it's just whatever comes out. That's Kinky. So he was fun. That was really a fun one. I've interviewed Tracy Lawrence, and he was
such a
wonderful person. Radney Foster. Now you're going to make me stretch my imagination. Ruthie Foster, she is a phenomenal artist, and I don't know how well she's known outside Texas, but she is a phenomenal blues artist, and I loved interviewing her. So I don't know. I mean, I've interviewed a lot and really enjoyed every bit of it.
Fantastic.
So let's get to the Jan's books, Beam. There's quite a list here. I've got four categories, the fictional bios, which is the four books, and then three more books, and a whole bunch of short stories that have been separately published, and then several anthologies that have Jan's stories in them. So, Jan, let's start with the four books that are biographical.
Well, you know, like my biography said, I never set out in life to be an author. That was never a goal I had. And when, you know, I had a story that had to be told, and I thought someone else would tell it. For years, people would come through our doors, and when I say our, I'm me and my husband, and they would say, somebody needs to write your story because this is just unbelievable. And it was. And I always thought somebody would write the story. But I woke up to the realization one morning that if someone else wrote it, I would have to tell the whole thing to them. So that was a light bulb moment. And I realized it was up to me to do it. And so I got busy. And the first class I took was a screenwriting class because I thought I was just going to write a movie script. But 10 minutes into the class, I knew my story was way too big for a movie, the whole story. Would love to see a segment of it made into a movie. But anyway, that it was just the when they say truth is stranger than fiction, it really truly is. And I started with the first book, which takes place in Abilene, Texas in 1971. So it spans a period of about 40 years, all of the stories, the four books together.
And those titles are Flowers in Stone, The Convict and the Rose, Home at Last, Until Death Do Us Part.
All right.
Yep, those are the four.
Talking about them being too long for to make a movie, there's always the miniseries, and there's always the Hallmark had done those. I can't think of the name of the book series, but they were set in the 1800s. And I'm thinking there was like love in the all of the titles or something along those lines. But anyway, they made a series of
Janet Oakey's books.
Yes, yes. There you go.
Janet Oakey, yeah.
And they did a series of those movies where there was, I don't know, six, seven, eight of those movies. And that's always something to look at too.
Not for that.
Now, Jan, did you expect this to be four books when you started, or did they just come one after the other, and might there be a fifth one?
No. The To Death Do Us Part ends the story, and unless I just wrote about myself. But when I started, I thought maybe I could do it in one book, and boy, quickly into it, I realized that wasn't going to happen either. Because there is so much of the story that has to be told as it unfolds. And so Flowers and Stone is set in Abilene in the 1970s and is set in the, as my blurb says, the rowdy, raucous honky-tonks of Texas. And it's true. That's exactly what it was. And that's where it starts, and that's where the story begins.
Now, listeners, if you have any questions or comments, you still have time. Pick up the phone, 516-453-9902. This is a great conversation we're having with author Jan Sykes. So come on, get in here, be part of it. Now, the next go-around here, you're talking about with the four, you first started getting into writing that first book and you realized it was going to be a lot more. I mean, that's probably, you're looking at, you know, this book's going to be 1,200 pages long.
Yeah.
If you edit it down.
Yeah. So you also wrote some other stuff.
I did.
Discovery,
and
Poetry and Art by Rick and Jan Sykes. What's this one about? Poetry and art. How did it come about?
So in the second book of the four, The Convict and the Rose, so the 15 years that Rick and I were apart, he was in Leavenworth Prison. He was arrested and convicted on two counts of armed bank robbery, a crime he did not commit, but because he would not tell them what he knew about it, he took the full sentence. So he was locked in Leavenworth for 15 years. During that time, he had to face some really hard truths about himself, and it was truly discovery. He when he first got there, he was very angry. He was bitter. He knew he hadn't done what he was accused of, and he was mad. So, you know, and he was a big guy, and he certainly wasn't afraid of fighting or standing up for himself. So he stayed in trouble a lot, stayed in the hole a lot. He just wanted to buck the system. He just wasn't going to do what they said to do. And so he spent a lot of time in solitary. So at this one particular point, he was about 3 years in, and he said he didn't really know if it was a dream or a vision, but a being came to him and basically, you know, it was a conversation. And from that point forward, he decided that he was going to be and do only positive things in a very negative place. And that's what he did. So to stay busy, to stay positive, to stay creative, he wrote hundreds of songs. He wrote this book of poetry. He did pen and ink drawings. He taught himself how to do leather work and Indian bead work. He made pottery. He kept his hands and his mind busy, and that's how he did the time. And even during one part of those 15 years, kind of toward the last, he managed to build a recording studio inside Leavenworth Prison. And so the music CD that matches The Convict and the Rose, every song on there was recorded behind the walls except for the title track. And the only reason for that was because I found the lyrics to that song after he had passed away. And I got one of my music artist friends, Jamie Richards, actually lives in Oklahoma but plays a lot in Texas. He went into the studio and put music to the lyrics. So discovery, we had it all this time. He came home with it. 1985. And after I finished the four books of the story, I just felt like that poetry and art book needed to be published because it is a beautiful book and it deserved to be published. So because Rick had passed away at that point, I put some of my poetry in the back of it so that I could publish it as Rick and Jan Sykes.
Good idea.
But the artwork, we called it pen and ink drawings, but it's pointillism. It's millions of tiny little dots. And it fascinated me to watch him do that because it would just, you could watch it start to take shape, that these little dots would start to make. It is amazing. Anyway, so I just felt like I really, that book needed to be published, and it's a beautiful coffee table book. I have it in hardback and paperback.
Yeah, that style of drawing that you're talking about, I've seen people do that. That takes a lot of patience and just
it does.
They look calm while they're doing it.
And that's very true. That was very true. So you can picture him in his prison cell with his little paper and pen, and that was a form of meditation for him. It was very calming.
Okay. We have a caller. You guys want to take a call? Stephen, you got a question?
Oh.
No, I was just going to comment that it's terrific that he had those opportunities. I mean, a lot of people see prisons as places where they should be harsh and punishment and just be mean to prisoners all the time, not really understanding that most of those people are going to get out at some point, and you need to have some kind of programs and things that they can do. I mean, I've mentioned on this show that all the way back to my master's degree days, I used to volunteer to teach writing classes in prisons. And man, what a difference that makes in the lives of people who don't have anything else going for them. And it can make the difference between being in trouble all the time and having a reason to stay out of trouble.
And it's how,
I'm just glad to see that, that he had that opportunity, and that even more so, it's now part of his legacy that you've collected that and put that together for sharing with the world.
Right.
That's a wonderful thing,
Jan.
You should be very proud of that.
I do want to say that it wasn't exactly he had the opportunity. He made the opportunities. They didn't present them to him. He made them.
Like what Stephen was talking about with these kind of programs and all that, that it aids in truly changing changing their mind.
You're breaking up.
All
right.
We didn't hear what you said.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just saying that the programs that Stephen was talking about, that's what helps people truly change, changes their minds, and it changes their hearts.
Right.
Did you get that?
If they want
they
got to want to.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Let's go ahead and go to the phone.
Yeah.
All right, here, come on. Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Verwayne.
Hello,
hi,
Verwayne. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jan.
Hey,
nice
Verwayne. How
you
doing?
I'm doing well. It's been fairly pleasant up here. It's only been about in the upper 60s, low 70s here. So.
Wow.
Worked in a prison, in the psych ward of a prison. I worked real close with a lot of guys who had kind of sealed themselves away. And one of the things I did was to, when the doctor would let them have it, is get them some pencil and paper and let them begin to write down the things that they were thinking. And that really helped.
Oh, yeah. That's great therapy.
Yeah, that gets everything right out there in the open.
It's amazing what you can learn if you let those guys begin to talk to you. So, I was going through Amazon and looking at all your stuff. If you were going to point out two books to me, and I typically will try to buy at least one or two stories of the featured guests, I just wondered, which two books would you tell me?
Well, it depends on your reading likes. If you are interested in the true story, then I would suggest and recommend the first two books of the four, Flowers and Stone and The Convict and The Rose. if you're looking just for some fun fiction entertainment and you don't have a lot of time, any of the short stories. I had so much fun writing all the short stories, and they're of all different genres. I've got everything from sci-fi to, oh, goodness, to a Western. I wrote a Western. I had never written a Western, but it was fun, and I really enjoyed doing it. And so there's the short stories offer a really diverse selection of genres. If you're interested in paranormal things like ghosts, which we haven't even got to talk about that. We're going to run out of time, guys.
But, no, we're not.
No, we're good.
All night.
My latest book, which is Ghostly Interference, it's classified as a paranormal romance, and there is a romance in it, but the paranormal factor is a ghost, and one of the characters who can see and communicate with this ghost. So it just depends on what you would like to read. It depends on your reading desires. I have something for everyone.
Now, Jan,
well,
how about...
just like you do.
How about if I read a short list of your short stories?
I go from romance to murder because one generally leads to the other. So.
I remember reading one of your books. It was something about Amanda something.
Oh, the totally unnecessary death of Amanda Dillon.
Yeah. I read that book.
That was based on a true story.
Now, what I started to say was, how about if I read these short stories real quick, and Jan, you tell us what genre or who you'd recommend each one for. Okay. Would that work? Okay, we got Jonah.
Jonah is a fantasy, and it is truly a journey of discovery, but it's fantasy in that it is set on a place that has creatures that are not real. They're fantasy-like creatures. They're very horrific, and poisonous plants that sting and bite, and then there's a wizard.
Oh, gotta have a wizard.
Gotta have a wizard
so
amongst the poisonous plants.
Fantasy. Now, I especially like this next title, Satin and Cinders.
Satin and Cinders is what we call microfiction. It is really, literally, it's like 1,500 words. It's like a blog. And it's a story about a wild stallion that lived in the forest, but he loved this beautiful white horse that lived with people, and she was tame, but she was gorgeous, and he just loved her. So it just is a story about his determination to let his love be known to her, and I did it in 1,500 words.
Wow, that's impressive.
That was fun.
Now, this is probably my favorite title, Two Shorts and a Snort.
So Two Shorts and a Snort was part of a contest, and you could enter as many short stories as you thought you could write in 90 days. And so I thought I could do three. As it turned out, I could do two and a poem. So the two shorts are the stories, and the snort is the poem.
And what genre are the stories?
The first one is set in modern times and was taken and inspired by a song by a Texas music artist, Charlie Robinson, called The Lights of Loving County, and is about a man's obsession with this woman, that he would do anything to be with this woman. So it's set in modern times. And then Maggie is kind of set in maybe the late 30s. Or early 30s, and it's on a ranch, and this older man and his wife find a baby that someone has abandoned, and so it's kind of a drama. That one would be a drama. Well, maybe both of those would be a drama.
And then the next one is Voodoo or Destiny, you decide.
Oh, that was so much fun to write. So that came actually from the inspiration for that story came from hearing something that happened to a woman that her and her husband were separated and were getting a divorce, and he died. But no one knew that they had separated or they hadn't filed for divorce yet. So she had to go through all of the motions of arranging for his burial, the funeral service, everything. And so in Voodoo or Destiny, it is a woman who her husband has come home and told her he doesn't love her anymore. He's found somebody else. He wants a divorce, and he leaves. Well, and she turns to her best friend, who just happens to be a descendant of a voodoo queen, and they wind up making a voodoo doll and getting very drunk, and I'm not going to tell what happens next, but I let the readers decide, and that's why I said you decide. I let the readers decide at the end of the book whether she actually did perform voodoo or if something just happened.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. The next one is Jewel. Tell us about Jewel.
If you've ever, and I'm sure you probably have at least heard of it, back in the 70s or maybe, yeah, it was in the 70s, Bobby Gentry had a song called Fancy. And then Reba McEntire remade that song. Well, this is kind of taken from Fancy. And only I took it a little farther and made it into a more complete story. But it's basically the premise of Fancy, which was this young girl that her mother turned out because she couldn't provide anymore and the mother was dying. And so she sent her to a whorehouse.
Yeah, uh-huh. I know the song and the story of the song. Bobby Gentry, that's a name from way back. There's an interesting story for another episode. A Soldier's Children. Now, I read that one, really enjoyed it. And I'm going to be reading another one here before too long.
Thank you.
Tell us about this
Children
one.
Children was a dream. It was a dream. And I don't know where it came from. I don't have any idea, but I dreamed about this little girl in an amusement park, and she was on a ride, and then she just vanished, and that's where my dream was. But then I took the story and turned it into something a little more. I didn't want to go too dark with especially with children. I didn't want to go too dark. So I couldn't really go forward with what I dreamed about her vanishing, but it was just enough to spark the idea for the story, and her and her sister are basically left to survive on their own. And, you know, it's so hard with short stories to even talk about them without giving the whole thing away.
Yeah. Now, I'm guessing that you mentioned a Western.
I'm guessing.
Brazos Wind. Brazos.
Yes.
It sounds like a Western.
It is. So in Texas, we have the Brazos River, and I was during the pandemic following some of my favorite music artists. They were doing live streaming on Facebook, and this one artist, Phil Hamilton, was doing this song called Brazos Wind, and I just went, oh, wow. I perked up and started listening really close, and it just gave me the idea. Now, his song is not about, it's not a Western. It's basically about the river and about, but it was enough, to spark that idea, but I wanted it to be set in the 1800s and to be a Western. And almost every reviewer that has read that book and reviewed it, the only thing they say about it, other than they loved it, was that they really want me to continue writing more of that story.
Okay. Brother's Keeper.
Now, Brother's Keeper is one that Verwaine might enjoy with his background.
And Verwaine's still on, so give a listen, Verwaine.
Brother's Keeper, the idea for it came about through a conversation with a family member. And she was talking about the fact that Rick went to prison for bank robbery, and that what if really it was his brother Robert that robbed the banks and he took the fall for it. Well, it wasn't, that was not true, but it was enough to spark the idea for the story. So in this story, Quentin Marks is, he, all of his life, he's been made to be responsible for his little brother. And his little brother is not a very nice person. And he winds up always having to pick up the pieces. But, and I won't tell what happens, but he,
that's intriguing.
So he has to make a pretty serious decision to save his brother.
So all of these short stories are available as individual ebooks, and people can get those where?
Well, they can get them on Amazon because they're all ebooks. They're also on Barnes & Noble, but yeah, I'm not sure anybody even reads on a Nook anymore.
Well, I use the Nook app on my computer sometimes. It depends on what file I have.
Yeah. Well, they are all on Amazon. That's the easiest place to find them.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Verwaine, we don't have to tell you, but we're going to anyway so everybody else can hear. When you check these stories out, get over there and leave a review so that we can share with the world and help Jan get her ratings solidified.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. We do.
All right, Verwaine. And also, since you're the caller that called in, the only one so far tonight, you're in the running for the book that Stephen's going to give away. How about that?
That you're already in the running for posting on Twitter.
Yeah.
Now, Jan, we skipped over one of your books
I'm good for a few things.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Verwaine, thank you. Do you have any further comments before we move on?
No, it's been interesting. Thank you for your time, Jan.
Thanks, Verwaine.
Well, thank you for calling in, Verwaine.
Thank you for calling in.
Now, the one that we skipped over is Flutter Your Wings by Jan Sykes and Nancy Evans. What is that about, and who is Nancy, and what's she doing in your book?
The only thing Nancy did was do some illustration. Flutter Your Wings was just a little story that I would tell to my grandchildren, and is about a butterfly and about using your imagination to fly. The butterfly wanted the child to play, and the child would say, but I have no wings, how can I play? And so the butterfly prompted the child to use his imagination to fly with it. And so that I just, after telling that story to the grandkids, I decided I would put it into a book. And I wasn't 100% happy with the illustrations, but I just went with it. It was what it was. I did it for the grandkids. That was it.
Hmm.
So it's a children's story.
We have a comment here on Twitter. John Howell has dropped in. He says,
so nice to hear
Jan on Voice of Indie Radio with Beam and Steven. She is such a talented writer. Thank you for popping in, John.
And John would recognize talent.
And Verwaine threw a quick tweet out here. He said the second installment of my Vella platform series is now up, will be available as soon as Amazon takes things live. The title of the series is Dealing with Grief. Once again, thank you for joining in, Verwaine. Now, I have a quick question here because we did mention this book, Ghostly Interference. It's called the White Rune series. So is this book one of what's going to be others? Okay.
Yes, there's three books in this series, and the commonality between all three books is there is a white rune that comes into this first book, and the symbol, and I don't know if you're familiar with runes, but I've been doing a whole series of them on my blog, but the symbol on the rune was a Wunyo symbol, which is a sign of a happily ever after. And so theories, the stone gets passed from book to book. But in Ghostly Interference, it comes to the female character, Rena Jett, from her brother who did not make it out of Afghanistan. It was his final letter to her, and it had the stone in it. And he told her in the letter, I want you to have enough happiness for both of us. because if you're reading this letter, I didn't make it home. So that's how the rune comes into the book. And the ghost in the book, Ghost Interference, is her brother. He is not content to move on into the other world until he knows that she's going to be okay.
Hmm, okay. Yeah, the white rune kind of sounds like a song from Cream. In a white room with black curtains at the stage.
Well, we might spell that just a little different. R-U-N-E.
I know.
Now, since we are promoting, I found three anthologies that had Jan Sykes' stories in it, too. There's a series called Short Stories by Indie Authors, and Volume 1 has a Jan Sykes story. And then there's another series called Short Stories by Texas Authors, and Volumes 2 and 5 both have Jan Sykes stories in them, too. As Dr. Helen said, Jan, prolific.
Thank you. I love doing it. I do. Otherwise, I wouldn't keep doing it. Once I had told the true story, I would have stopped. But there didn't seem to be a way to stop because I believe, and this is just my own personal thing, but if I am given the inspiration, I feel like it's my duty to do something with it. So as long as the inspiration keeps coming, I'll keep writing.
I agree with that because I've got a notebook full of story ideas that have come to me over the years that I haven't gotten around to writing them, but I jotted the ideas down. So every so often I get enough time to where I can write one of these, whether it's a short story or long. I'm working on two novels right now. So the short stories are kind of on the back burner. I'm trying to get these novels done, notebook, I keep it tucked away, and the ideas still come. I'll jot them in there. Cause like you said, if it's given to you,
exactly.
It's up to you to do something with it. It's a good philosophy.
Yes. When I was writing The Convict and the Rose, the idea for this story, Ghostly Interference, came to me during that time. But I couldn't stop what I was doing in writing the true story. So I wrote the first chapter, and I called it When Two Worlds Collide, because to me that was the perfect title for the book. But we can talk about that or not, whatever. But as I pitched this book for 3 years to publishers and agents. And during this pandemic, I got picked up by a publisher and they took it. But the first thing they wanted to change was the title because there were too many out there that were similar. And I agree, you know, for marketing, it's hard enough to find or to get your book seen as it is. And if there's 10 titles that are the same, then it's even harder. So I get that. And I was okay with the title change. But, yeah, that the idea for the story came, God, I don't even know what year that was, 2014 or 15? 2014, I guess. So it just had to sit there and wait for me.
So you jot them down when you get the idea?
Yes, definitely. I've got a notebook full and just jot down the ideas. And if you can even take the time to write a few lines, it just kind of solidifies it in that moment.
I've got a folder on my computer of works in progress that's got, you know, several partially written short stories.
Yep.
But they usually get finished. In my own time. So what are you working on now? Anything current?
So this in the White Rune series, we just finished the second round of copy edits, and I sent it back to the editor. And it is going to be titled Jagged Feathers. And the main character in this story was introduced in book one. He was the soldier who delivered the letter from Sam Jett to Rena. And so he's the main character in the second one. And then while I was waiting for them to work on the second one, I went ahead and wrote on the third one. And I'm about 65,000 words into it. So I'm kind of on the downhill slide with that, but I had to stop and do the copy edit. So now I'm ready to get back to that one. And the main character in that one was introduced in book one as a minor character. And that's kind of what I'm doing. I'll finish this series, and then I don't know what's next.
Something will pop up.
Yep.
Now, I see the Wild Rose Press listed as publisher. Is that you? Is that something that you've put together?
No. That is the publisher that picked me up. They are out of New York. And like I say, it's just a personal thing, because I love being an indie author in that it gives you the freedom, control of your work. But I was determined, because I had taken so much money out of my savings to publish these true stories, I was determined I wasn't going to do that with fiction. And so that's why I kept pitching it to agents and editors and publishers. So the Wild Rose Press picked it up, and they're publishing for me. So they are a traditional publisher. They're not a hybrid. They are a traditional publisher in that they do all of the – they put all the money out for it. And then, of course, as the author, I get very little money back, but at least I have to put the money out.
Hmm. Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of effort, a lot of perseverance, and it takes being able to handle a lot of frustration.
It does. And again, I'll go back to my sister, because when I would kept hitting brick walls, and I would tell her, well, maybe the story's just no good. Maybe I just need to, and she'd be like, shut up. Stop it. And she would always remind me that when she first started writing, she had a lot of rejections before she got picked up. And now she's a USA Today and New York Times best-selling author. So,
well, there you go. I think that's the story with all authors. I don't know that there's any author that first manuscript that they wrote, they sent it off, and hey, we want to make you a star.
Yeah,
I know. I only know one. I do know one, and it was just one of those phenomenal things that doesn't happen very often, but. He lives in Amarillo, Texas, and his book will be coming out later this year. But his first manuscript, they were blown away, obviously, and it's already in the works for a movie. And
wow.
They've given him six figures, and so.
Ooh.
But that doesn't happen. That's just very rare, very rare.
But Stephen King, he wrote two manuscripts before. Carrie was actually his third book, and the two manuscripts were rejected by everybody. Carrie was rejected
by
numerous publishers, and he finally got the one, and he made enough money off the initial printing to take care of his mother, who was going through cancer at the time. But then he talked about when it hit paperback, boom, he said he suddenly became independently financially set. So he didn't have to worry about anything. And then you look at everything that kind of came after that. Then he turned around. I believe he ended up publishing eventually the first two manuscripts as well. I'm forgetting which ones they are.
Right.
But. Well, he could publish a grocery list right now, and it'd be a bestseller.
And
so.
And make a miniseries out of it.
He's got a fan base for sure.
So, Jan, do you have any advice for other writers out there?
I think we've probably touched on some of it, but anybody that has a story to tell, I tell them, write it. Write the story. Even if you do nothing more with it than that. But in this day and age with self-publishing and the ability to put your work out there, pretty much available to everyone who wants to publish a book. Now, I will say writing a book is not easy. If you think it is, you're in the wrong business, because it's not. It's not easy.
And it's not fast either.
No, it's not. You have to have patience. You have to have perseverance. and you've got to have determination. And you've got to have some level of self-confidence, because that raven of doubt will sit on your shoulder and tell you all day long, nobody's going to read that crap. Nobody likes that. That's not good. You're not, you don't know what you're doing. And you just tune it out and go on. But the one piece of advice I tell everyone who talks to me about publishing a book is don't skip the part about hiring a professional editor. I don't
Amen.
Care how good you are. I don't care how, if you've got 10 master's degrees in English, you can't edit your own work effectively. The brain
yeah.
sees what it wants to see.
Yeah,
so
you need that. You need
that
second
part,
pair of eyes.
You need that second and maybe third pair of eyes.
Yeah.
And even then, at that point, even some typos may slip through or some head hopping, or, you know, it's just, it's a lot to this craft. And I think that's one thing that I enjoy the most about it, is that you never reach a point where you think you've learned it all, because it's such a large craft, and you just want to always get better. My goal is that every piece of work I publish better than the last one.
Yeah, that's a good goal. Now, before we wrap up here, see, you were worried about running out of time. We schedule these for 90 minutes, just in case. Just in case. Now, before we do run out of time, how can people contact you on social media? You have a blog, website, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Very popular blog.
I am everywhere. So
I am everywhere.
The easiest way to connect with me, I've lived everywhere, so now I am everywhere. The easiest way to connect with me is through my website, which is jansykes.com. From my website, you'll find ways to find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, my blog, all of it. It's all centrally located on my website.
All right. So let's
We do have another comment, Beam.
Okay.
Robert Williscroft says, always, and I think he meant always think, T-H-I-M-K.
No, think, that's a Romanian word. It means,
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I think Robert's messing with us on the editor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yep.
Well, Jan, it's been a blast having you on. We had been looking forward to this for a while, and we will definitely have you on again.
I love it. It was a lot of fun. I feel like I didn't even touch on half of what we needed to, but we did what we did, and I loved it. I loved all of it.
Well,
the
that's why we'll have you on again.
The opportunity to talk about your books is, well, there you go. We'll go in depth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Beam, who do we have on next week?
Next week we have the mother and daughter duo of Stephanie and Ellie Collins. Both are authors. Stephanie wrote a memoir
with angels' wings.
And Ellie Collins is our young author of the Greek mythology series. Go over to our YouTube channel, and there's a trailer up there. She's got audiobooks for her books. And just, we did the audiobooks, and that was a lot of fun. So you'll definitely want to tune in. It's going to be a fun show as well. So
I have always been amazed at the number of awards that Stephanie Collins has won for that book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's got like 50 of them. Yeah, Ellie is following in her shoes, her footsteps. So
yeah.
She's got a couple dozen. Couple dozen at least,
yeah.
Yeah. And then
that family.
Then the week after that, we've got California author D.L. Finn. And Beam, you've known Denise Finn for a long time.
Denise Finn, yes. This is going to be another one that we're looking forward to.
Friend.
Yep, just like we were looking forward to Jan, we're looking forward to having Denise on as well. So you guys are going to want to tune in for that one. Denise has written a lot of really cool stories and a lot of short stories like Jan. So tune in for that one. And I'd like to announce that Trenton Bennett, who was on a couple weeks ago, he is
voiceover
actor. Yeah, voiceover artist. He is now on the Fresh Ink Group website. He's a Fresh Ink member, and he's on the G's Writer website as well. And if you are interested in audiobooks, this guy, even if you don't use him as your voiceover guy, he knows the ins and outs, and he takes questions. If you listen to the show he was on, he's knowledgeable about what Amazon and all that, all those other places expect, and the best way to do certain things. So if you have questions, I mean, this is the guy that can answer them.
Yes, if you want to get into audiobooks, he's the guy, and now you can find him on G's Writer talking about that, giving you guidance, and offering opportunities for you to contact him. We also, I think it was a week or two before that, we had Carlisle Toms on the show, and Carlisle Toms has now joined Fresh Ink Group, and he is bringing three books to us. So we are getting ready to release one of those in about a month or so. We're pleased to have him. Thanks for joining, Carlisle. And what have you been doing, Beam?
I have been editing Patricia Guthrie's Legacy of Danger, and the editing part is pretty much done, and I'm going to go through and smooth out some of her work there, and that'll be finished before too long, so Patricia Guthrie will have a new one coming out.
And our digital artist is working on a cover for Legacy of Danger, as well as her book, Water Lilies Over My Grave. And then after that, we're going to be publishing a book of her short stories. So we're glad to have Patricia Guthrie with Fresh Ink Group now. So, Beam, what happens if they miss an old show?
If they miss an old show, they're out of luck. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
These things are going to linger with the cockroaches and Keith Richards after the nuclear warfare. So Keith will have something to listen to. Now, check the archives at beamweeks.com, freshinkgroup.com, and stephengees.com. And each of those websites has a podcast tab. Click on that. Everyone's there, every episode we've ever done. Go to the YouTube channel, that's Fresh Ink Group on YouTube, and please subscribe. If you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. We're trying to grow this thing and make this into a big platform for artists, writers and musicians and artists who paint and whatever, poets and, you know, just photographers, whoever. We're trying to support people. This is the big push is supporting. And we're also on Spotify. Just go to Spotify and type in Voice of Indy, all one word, and boom, there they are, every episode.
Now, that YouTube channel, there must be some kind of a glitch in their system, because we've been sitting at 136 subscribers for 2 weeks now. Surely those numbers are going up, and we're just not seeing the numbers yet. But we also have 108 videos over there now, and by probably this time tomorrow, we should have 109 with the new Mac McDowell Mission Series video listing all three of Robert G. Willis Croft's Mac McDowell Mission books.
Yep. So if you want to contact us, give us feedback on the videos or whatever, go to the Fresh Ink Group website, and at the bottom of the page is a contact form, and you can sign up for the newsletter there. You can ask us questions. If you have a question for the guest and you're listening to this in the archive and it's not live, so you can't interact, you can still interact. You can go to the contact form and you can ask your question, and we will get that question to Jan.
And remember, we're giving away books now. And Jan, it was a treat having you on. We're really glad you could stop by. Thanks. We're looking forward to talking to you again. And readers, get out there and find Jan Sykes's books. It's some good material.
Thanks, Jan.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you to everybody that tuned in tonight.
See you next week.
We will see you next week.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com, and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.